Hello, welcome, and thanks for checking in today to No Vacancy, the podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Palmer. I'm an Airbnb ambassador and 17-time super host, and I've hosted over 1,000 reservations. I'm a stay-at-home mom of two and manage my 8 listings remotely. My mission is to help new and experienced vacation rental hosts turn their listings into fully booked, profitable properties that can be managed from anywhere, so you too can have no vacancies. If that sounds good to you, let's get right into the show. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of No Vacancy, the podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Palmer. Today, I have on repeat guest Patrick Switek. We had him back on, I think, a year ago, exactly January of 2023. And I'm recording with him again in January of 2024. Last time we had him on, we talked about the Burr strategy. But since then, I know that Patrick has kind of pivoted his model and he is now buying outright co-hosting portfolios and property management companies. I think this is so interesting. And every co-host I know, including myself, has always just acquired like 1, 2, maybe 3 properties at a time. And it's been kind of a slow growth. And I know with your first company, Patrick, I'll let you kind of introduce yourself here, reintroduce yourself. You bought like 26 properties outright. Right, with the first company that you purchased. I'll let you correct me here, but it's just such an expedited way to grow your portfolio. And I think it's so interesting. I asked you guys to submit questions on Instagram and the questions were really good. I ran them with Patrick right before we started recording and he said he's got answers for all of those. So we will just dive right in. Can you reintroduce yourself for anyone who didn't listen a year ago and also update us on what has changed since the last time you were on the show?
Yeah, no, thank you, Natalie, so much. It's an honor being a second time guest. I don't know how many others have been second time guests or third time guests, but you know, it really means a lot to me. But yeah, so a little bit about me, just for the people that don't remember. I still do Burr strategy, right? So I still buy ugly properties, I renovate them, and I make them into beautiful Airbnbs. The only difference now is that I decided to add on another revenue stream because I realized in order to keep buying these properties and keep doing the same process, I need cash flow. And what better way to make cash flow than having a co-host portfolio, right? And co-hosting properties. And you talk about this a lot. So, you know, people understand the benefit there. But a little bit about me, just to give a little recap, I started entrepreneurship since I was 14 years old. I built my first tech company at 14 and scaled it and sold it by the time I was 18 years old. Made around $40,000 a year doing that. Had a staff of 15 people. It was awesome. From there, I continued my entrepreneurial journey. I did a lot of other things in tech, iTech products and things of that nature, but then eventually transitioned into short-term rentals where I fell in love with hospitality and just the whole idea of buying these high cash flowing assets that with little to no money down and renovating them and then turning it into pretty much these beautiful Airbnbs. So that's the Burr strategy. Since then, just a little bit of an update for you guys. I was at a point at January of last year, so January of 2022, or sorry, January of 2023. It's been a year. I left my job a year ago since that point, right? So January 2022, I left my job. So I was like, you know what? Cash is getting dry. It's getting pretty dry. And I need a way to start making more cash flow. So the thing that I knew how to do is Airbnb. So naturally, somebody like that says, you know what? I'm going to start getting co-host clients. You know, I had 6 of my own at the time. I'm going to start doing co-host clients. Let's do this thing. And as I was going through and trying to find a co-host clients, I had a friend come to me and tell me, well, listen, I don't have one client for you, but I have 15. And I thought to myself, what do you mean by that? And she basically found somebody that was selling a portfolio of 15 short-term rentals. And that were under co-hosting. It wasn't like owning, it was co-hosting. And that was kind of the journey and the start of something beautiful. To today, as of now, it's been 10 months since then, I went from 6 properties that I own to acquiring 2 companies and in escrow on my 3rd one. These are short-term rental property management companies or co-hosting companies. I'm on my 3rd one. And currently I have 50 short-term rentals under my portfolio. I went from 6 to 50 in 10 months. So currently, as it sits today, 42 of those are live right now and generating money. 8 of those are just signed, but ready to onboard. And then we have another like 10, 20 that are just in the pipeline. So it's an awesome business. But what you guys really want to know is, okay, how did you get from January of last year to now? And like, how did that process work? You can go through some of these questions that people had if you'd like, Natalie.
Yeah. Well, so my first question is, what made you like confident when that person approached you and said, okay, I don't have 1 client to give you, 1 listing to give you, I have 15. How did you know running 6 that you could take on 15? And immediately, that's basically a completely different business. What were like the first changes that you made to take on an extra 15? Yeah. And now you were representing 21 properties total. One thing I am absolutely craving for 2024 is simplicity, but we all know that the setup process for a new short-term rental is anything but simple. That is why I'm so excited to tell you about HostGPO. By shopping with HostGPO, you can save up to 75% on furniture, decor, linens, amenities, and supplies, and they only work with a few select brands that are tried and tested to stand up to the wear and tear of guests. With HostGPO, there is no overwhelm of comparing hundreds of brands, variations, and product reviews. You just shop for what you need and rest assured that you are getting the best quality at the best price. Over 300,000 properties are already purchasing through HostGPO, and as the pool of customers grows, so do the discounts that HostGPO can negotiate for us hosts. By signing up through my link in the show notes below, you'll get an exclusive 3 months of free access to start shopping on HostGPO today. Thank you so much to HostGPO for sponsoring the show and for making it so simple to set up and restock our STRs.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I'm going to give you guys like real advice after the fact, because I learned a lot through these acquisitions. But at the time, I just wanted to jump in and I really didn't think about how to value the company or how to do anything. I just did, you know, learning through doing or through action. And I think that's how you should just take action, just do it, and you'll figure out along the way. And even if you make mistakes, I still don't regret it. But at the time, I realized, wow, they have 15 properties. And they already have the systems in place. It's a full functioning running business. They have managers in place. They have systems in place. They have good relationships with these owners. They already had incredible relationships with other vendors in the area. So I could easily just take these 15 properties and take all the resources that they have there and apply it to my own 6 properties, which would allow my own, because they were all in the same market. So actually, if anything, it actually made my business better, because my properties I own got the benefit of having the in-house maintenance person, had the benefits of having in-house cleaners. So now I didn't have to pay extra for cleaning. I got low rates in the cleaning. So automatically I'm making money there. So it was just such a win-win situation for me. It made my original properties more money. But once I brought them in as well, it's a full functioning business. Right.
You brought your own personal properties underneath this now brand that had all the existing infrastructure. Okay. That's really interesting. And I'm curious, why did they sell? When I think of somebody who's going to sell their co-hosting portfolio, I think of somebody who like has not trained VAs or doesn't have a direct booking website and like is just kind of scraped it all together. But if they had all of this in place, what was the reason for them wanting to sell?
Yeah. So the big reason was they just bought a hotel and they were very busy. They just had a little kid, and you know, the people that have kids understand this, and it took up a lot of their time, and they weren't utilizing VAs. They weren't utilizing some of the things. They did have structure in place. They had managers in place. They kind of built it around that. And we saw a lot of value that we could bring to this business. And they knew that themselves. They knew that we could bring a lot of value. They had in-house cleaning. We knew that we can make a lot of money off the in-house cleaning alone. Just a lot of revenue potential where we wanted to come in. And yeah, and a lot of times people will ask that question, like, why sell, right? And so part of my criteria of why I choose these businesses the way that I do is this was an owner that was tight on time. that was not in growth mode. They weren't growing anymore. They weren't trying to scale and get to the next level. Because if you're talking to somebody that's in growth mode, you're going to be paying growth mode prices. So this is like somebody that really was settled in, ready to sell, and just found, we needed somebody to carry the legacy, to carry the torch. And I was there at the right time to do that.
Did they put a price on this, or did you guys come in and evaluate it and come up with a price you were comfortable paying?
Yeah, we both came together and thought of a price. The way we structured it was 50%. It was seller financing, 50% upfront. And we paid 1x of like gross, or I think it was like 2.5x of EBITDA, or like 1x of gross revenue. We just kind of came up to a mark of what it would, the payback period was, hey, if in 2.5 years we can pay this back based on what they're making revenue wise right now, like it'll be worth it. Cause I know we're going to add value to this. So that's okay. Kind of like what we thought of.
And I want to make very clear to the audience, you did not buy 15 properties, right? Like you bought these existing co-hosting contracts. Correct. So can you tell us exactly what was included like in the purchase? Like what were the deliverables that you, when you signed, you were acquiring?
Yeah. So now this is like what I was thinking at the time, right? But when I'm valuing this company, I'm not telling you that's how to value the company. I'm telling you what I did the first time around. I just want to clear that up.
This is good. So you've learned since, but this is an important first step of the journey. Okay.
I did not value it correctly. I actually overvalued it by fault. So don't take what I'm saying right now. This is my process, right? This is my story. So the big thing is buying the contracts. That's what you're buying. You're not buying with a management company, you're buying the contracts. And you're buying the relationships, you're buying some brand and some infrastructure that they already have in place, which is nice because then you don't have to go through that whole, selling period of time, getting to 10 properties so you can sell an additional 5. When you have more properties, it's easier to sell. Like the moment that I got the management company, I was hitting the ground running and selling people because I had 15 properties behind my back, or 20 or 21 actually, including my own, which just makes it so much easier to get more clients. And so that was part of it. But going back, yes, I did pay. You do pay for the contracts when you buy a business primarily.
Okay. And then when you reread those contracts, did you feel the need to reissue or have the owners re-sign up something new? I'm sure that there were things in those contracts that weren't necessarily the way that you would want to do business. So how did you approach changing that up?
Yeah, good question. So there's two ways to buy businesses, just in general. There's asset sales, which you're buying for everything that they own, and I'm probably butchering this for the M&A people, or you buy through a membership sale or you're buying a stock in the company. It's a stock sale. So stock sale basically means, hey, you're taking the existing company and you're becoming the new owner of this company. So that's what we did. So we inherit those contracts automatically because it's part of the existing company that they have. Because we started from scratch, right? So, but if you have an existing co-hosting business, getting contracts, that's a whole different game. Versus I just outright bought stock in this business and I became 100% owner of this, or 90% owner of this business. So yeah.
Sorry, so they did not have existing contracts?
So they already had the existing contracts. So automatically, I get those existing contracts because I become the new owner of the business. Right?
Okay.
The business owns the contracts. So we become owners of the business. We own the contract.
Okay, sure. Yeah. No, but so my question is, when you read those contracts, was there anything in there that maybe they said owner is responsible for this, co-host or property manager is responsible for this? You didn't agree with it and you wanted to revise those. Did any of that occur? And if yes, what was the approach there? How did you tell the owners you're with new management now? Did any of them leave? Were any of them upset about the new terms or anything?
Yeah. So I left it as is. I didn't actually the contract. Currently, we are revising our contract and there's a reason for that. So I'll get into that. But at the time they have very, very lenient contracts. Their contracts were 6 months, then month to month. So a lot of people are like, that's kind of scary. You're buying a business with only month-to-month contracts. So the way that we did the transition period is, in the beginning, we had the owners introduce us to everybody. and basically transfer of authority to us. And like that first 90 days was really about building relationships with every owner. So the first 90 days of buying a company, you're going to build relationships with owners. The owners are going to hype you up pretty much. They're basically going to say, hey, everything's going to be the same. We have the same people. The same faces are going to be within the company. The same managers are going to be managing your property. The only difference is there's new owners. And actually, they add to the value of the business because these new owners have X, Y, and Z, right? Okay. So that's what they said. They said, look, this guy comes from an Airbnb background. I do Airbnb seminars or short-term rental seminars. So I'm in the space. I'm education. I know all the educational stuff. So I can bring a lot of value there. Josh brings a lot of value on the construction side. He, my business partner, he's done over 100 flips. So like when we came into these meetings, it was coming from a sense of expertise, and that authority transfer went to us, which, you know, as time went on, we built trust and we allowed to retain those clients. However, the reason why we structured it the way we did, we did a seller holdback. What basically that means is he put 50% up front, but the second 50% that we give to the owners depends on retention of the existing contracts. That's the provision that actually protects our butt so that we don't buy something and then everybody leaves, right? Okay. So that's where we protected. So we bought the brand and bought the systems and all that. And then our idea was on the back end, we'd be protected, you know?
How are you ensuring that retention? I mean, you know, I just think if I had a co-host and then they sold it and I didn't like the new guy, I could, like, what's stopping me if they had these month-to-month contracts? What's stopping me as the owner? I don't care about this transaction or making the new owner happy. What if I just want to pull my place and start self-managing or find another co-host?
They could. If my performance wasn't there, if I didn't do a good job, but we did a great job. We actually crushed them. We made more money for them. Clients didn't want to leave. If anything, they were in that position. We were in a better position because basically when we came in, it was kind of a, I don't know if I can say this, but a shit show. There was a lot of stuff going on, and we came in and we said, all right, this is all the systems that we're building. Two managers left. We took on liability from the company. We didn't do any due diligence. But the moment you signed on that dotted line, we realized we inherit all of the risk that, like, if somebody slipped and fell under the old owners and they didn't have the proper insurance, like, we would be responsible for that. So we took on a lot of risk that we could have offset by doing really good due diligence, and we didn't do that. That was the biggest mistake we made. We kind of just jumped in like, hey, whatever, we're going to do this. And retaining the clients was great because if clients left, it was because they weren't a good fit to begin with. And we really weren't. We had four or five clients leave. But those clients, we didn't even really want. The core clients we kept because we crushed it for them. And those are people that we want to work with anyways. So it's still worth it. But there's a lot of things that happened, like they didn't have people on payroll and like they were on 1099 instead of payroll. So that's misclassification of employees. Like, that's not good. There was a lot of stuff with like we had somebody working for us that was a felon. Like, I didn't know that because I didn't do my due diligence once again. And so like now we were trapped with this person that's a felon, and like we had to let go of him, and we were scared that he was going to do something. And this was a felon that was consistently causing trouble during our time together. So that was a different kind of, it wasn't like somebody that was rehabbed or clarify that. And yeah, there's
this brings up so many things, like, you know, making sure you're giving the owners confidence, the existing owners confidence to stay with you, that the sellers are going to do a good job introducing you to everybody. And then the existing staff, are they going to be comfortable working under you, running background checks on those people before you've technically signed and bought everything? Okay. Yep. This brings up a lot of very interesting points.
Yeah. And so with that, like, how do you offset that? How do you make it so it's more of a secure, less risky purchase? In a lot of ways, honestly, just doing due diligence is big. But also what I've learned is that there's a strategy and way and approach to actually get into a business and basically not rock the boat. So there's a way that I've learned to strategically, because on my second acquisition, we did a great job. It was very smooth. And our third one is going to be incredible. I can't wait because we've actually done our due diligence. We've actually went through all the contracts that they had in place. And we actually paid a good amount of money, and we have good relationships with the owners. Like, it's just a better I'm feeling better and I've gotten better at the whole strategy, and I feel really good about the whole transition and how to do that. But that takes time. That takes going through it. We had 16-hour days that we were working where we were hiring people to do the tasks that we were doing as well. You know, like when we bought the business, like we didn't adjust. We looked at the revenue. We're like, this is great revenue. But then you forget, hey, the previous owner was doing all the comms, all the communication. Now you got to do the communication unless you hire somebody for that. And that's going to be an expense. And that's going to drive your revenue, your net revenue down. Mm-hmm. So all the different things added up. I'm like, the accountant, they had in-house accounting. Like the other owner was doing the accounting. And now we had to do the accounting. And so now we had to pay for that. And so we were building this whole thing. And we're actually in a really good place now where this whole business, we have a COO in place. She's incredible. She does everything really, really well. Like she builds systems and training and SOPs and all of that. We have two area managers. We have client-facing people, onboarding people. We have seven VAs. We have grown since. We have two in the accounting department. I think it's eight VAs, actually. And we're looking to hire two more. Two of them are in an accounting department. So we have accounting VAs. We have just so much structure in place now. We have a handyman in-house. We have multiple other handymen. Like, it's just night and day from what it was before. And that just comes down to just like really learning from what they had and building something great.
When you bought the second company and you acquired, how many properties did you bring on with the second transaction?
So second transaction, I learned my role. What we did there, we did a contract buyout, which is different and is something I prefer in a lot of more cases.
Okay.
So we'll get into that as well. But a contract buyout basically is you're going after the contracts versus going after like buying a business and having a stock in the business, right? So a contract buyout is usually when you have less than 30 or 40. Usually you want to do a contract buyout, and that's a different valuation than something that's more than like 30, 40. That's okay. What I've So okay. Because we were under the 30, 40 for my first acquisition, I should have done a contract buyout, but I didn't. And so I had to redo all the systems anyways, but they still had good foundation. But I would have done it differently, right? In this case, we just went up to the owner. The owner was looking, he was in a bad position. He took a high interest loan during COVID, but he had these really great contracts that were locked in at 30%. Okay. And he came in before COVID. So they, you know, they're still making their mortgage and making money. And we came in and he was in a very distressed position. He was shutting down. And I told him, I said, hey, if you're looking to shut down, like I put agreement together that like he was able to recoup his costs and make money without having to, you know, deal with the contracts. And so like anybody that signed went under that agreement. So he didn't have assignable contracts, which is something I highly recommend. Having a signable contract so you can switch it over to somebody else. Okay. But in his case, we signed new contracts with all those people honoring what his contract was. And so anybody that signed on with us, which was 10 properties around that, that added to our existing infrastructure as well, which helped us scale a lot faster.
Okay. So the biggest difference with just the contract buyout is that you didn't have, like, you weren't acquiring a cleaner with them or anything. There was no managers in place. It was literally just, and again, was there anything in those contracts that protected you? Like they still have to stay with you until the end of a certain amount of time, or could you have bought in that? And then the owners were like, oh, this is void now because I signed it with this co-host and he's gone now.
Yeah. We signed new contracts. So we got them under our contracts. So we have them secured anyways, or otherwise it's a breach of contract. We don't want like lock in owners like that, but you know, keep in mind that we have to recoup our costs of operating. It takes a lot of effort, as you know, Natalie, to onboard a client and work with them. But I wanted to talk about like valuations for that, right? Like what are you supposed to value a company and how does that work? So normally in this industry, with a company that has over 30, 40 units, like you co-hosting properties, you usually value it at a 3 to 5x. So 3 to 5 multiple of EBITDA. EBITDA, what EBITDA means is just earnings before interest, taxes, and something with the A. I think it was like appreciate. I don't remember what the A was.
Okay.
But it's a tax term. It basically means net profit.
Okay.
Cash in your pocket with that. Cash in your pocket, but it doesn't include like salary that gets paid out to owners or like depreciation or like you know, taxes, like you don't take it out of tax, like you add that back in, right? So that's like the number. So it's like, how much, basically, how much cash will I make as the new owner that comes into this business? And now multiply that by 3 to 5.
Okay.
That's the way to look at it. Now, with that, there's less, the reason you do that with a bigger company is there's less risk, because now if 20% of the people leave, that's only four contracts at 40 versus, you know, 20. I mean, if you get a big chunk of people leaving, if you get 5 people leaving, it's like 10%.
Yeah.
Contracts versus 5 people leaving for me at 15 contracts is 33%. That's a lot of people. And that can ruin your cash flow in your business. And so there's less risk with more structure and more properties. So that's why there's value there.
I have said so many times on this podcast that finding a good, reliable cleaner is the single most important thing you can do to ensure a successful STR business. And if anyone has ever dealt with a bad cleaner, you know I'm right about this. Turno is here to solve that problem for us hosts once and for all. With Turno's cleaner marketplace, you can find your dream cleaner and have access to a whole network of backup cleaners in case of emergency. Once you find your trusted cleaner, use the Turno app to manage and automate the entire cleaning process, from auto scheduling that gets synced directly to your booking calendar, auto payments, photo checklists, problem reporting, and inventory management. Right now, Turno is offering No Vacancy listeners a $150 Amazon gift card just for trying out Turno's cleaner marketplace and completing one clean with them. Just use the link turno.com/novacancy to unlock that offer and stop settling for cleaning quality that you're unhappy with. Again, that is turno.com/novacancy to find your dream cleaner and snag that bonus $150 Amazon gift card. And then what's the difference between how you would evaluate the contract buyout versus in your first deal, how you bought everything, including the cleaners and the managers?
Really good question. So the way you're supposed to value a contract buyout is 1 to 1.5 times the management revenue. So what does that mean? That means if this property makes $100,000 a year and you have a 25% agreement, management agreement, then you're making $25,000, correct? So that's how much the contract value is. Now, that can get, you know, that can, you could spin it different ways, but what basically that's kind of how it works. Now, let's talk about like valuation in general, right?
Like, oh, sorry, can I spend like a minute on that? So, yeah, let's say that the properties, you're doing a contract buyout, 10 properties, some co-host acquired, he's making $100,000, they're each generating $100,000.
Yep.
He's getting 25% commission, so $25,000 a year times 10. So that's like, that's the price you would pay, basically?
You pay $250,000. That'd be the value.
Well, the 3 to 5 EBITDA, is that what it was? That apply here.
It doesn't apply for any company that's under like 30 to 40, like under that.
Okay.
There's exceptions, obviously, but like if, you know, most companies that are like 30 to 40, they don't really have enough to really be worth just buying out, you know?
So in this case, what you're doing a contract buyout for, do you know, it's just the exact amount that you would expect to generate per year times number of units. So you would make your money back within a year?
A year. But that's as is, right?
As is, right. Not including that you're going to put some improvements into it. Yes.
Talk to the owners and manage. So I'm going to tell you where the economics of why I love buying businesses and why I think it's going to be the best trend anybody can get into in 2024 and 2025. I believe it's so hard. I think that it's even better than buying boutique hotels in some cases from a cash flow perspective, because boutique hotels are awesome. But from a cash flow perspective, this is the best way to do things, because I can go on and on, but
I'm just like shook at this point. Like, you'd make the money back within a year.
I know. But here's the thing.
I always thought with businesses, it's like there's this cap rate, you multiply the value times 10, like you recoup the costs over a decade, like, you know, 5 years minimum. But this is a year we're talking.
Yep, a year. So a year to year and a half, depending on if you get the 1x or the 1.5x.
Okay.
So with this case, right, when I bought my first business, just on putting pricing together, like my pricing strategy versus what the previous owner was doing, I added 30% top line revenue in that business. 30%. So that means that, let's say that it's supposed to take, I don't know the math, honestly, but let's say it's supposed to take a year. But now that I increased the revenue by 30%, it's going to be there a lot faster. It's going to be, I don't know the math, but...
month. Someone's yelling at us right now.
Somebody's like, dude, you guys know. But you get the idea. You would get faster. So like, let's say that I can make, let's just say for easy math, I can make 50% more, you know? That mm-hmm. means I'm able to get my money back, and I can potentially make my money back in the first 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, straight profit. So there's a lot of really cool things there. But people don't, yeah, go on.
How are you financing this? Do most of these owners want the cash straight up, or are you able to do seller financing where you're actually just paying this out over the course of the 12 months? Mm-hmm. Just breaking even, and then you start profiting in year two officially. Or yes. I don't know if this counts as year zero, yeah. And then year one, you make money.
100%. So the way that I structured my first one was seller financing. So you can do seller financing. A lot of owners are open to that, especially when they get a higher price. You can potentially, like, there's always levers with seller financing. You can make it work. And so if you do seller financing, you have the advantage of not being able to pay everything up front. I did seller financing, and then for my seller financing, the 50%, I had my business partner put down the 50%. So I was $0 in out of pocket, and I was making cash flow day one. So there's creative ways you can get around that and work with that. And, you know, people can get really creative. You can even find somebody to pay a 10% return on their money. Let's say the company's valued at $100,000, or these contracts are valued at $100,000. You can take out a loan at 10%. From somebody that has $100,000 just sitting around in their bank. And now you're paying 10% on that money, but you're getting instant cash flow day one that you can pay mm-hmm. off that loan and make money. So that's really cool there. However, if it's a bigger deal, this is where it gets really fun. So this is my third deal that I'm doing right now. This bigger deal, the way that we're funding it is through, well, the second deal, let me tell you the second deal. We did a lot of earnouts. So like, how much they make depends on how much we bring in for those contracts. So there's a lot of that. So that means you're zero. I'm 0% down on that deal, and I'm getting, it depends on how much money we make, he makes. You mm-hmm. see what I mean? Like a zero risk deal. But on the third deal, we had to pay, the owners wanted to pay either more money for seller financing, or if we paid all cash, we would be at a lower rate. And so we decided to go with the lower rate and then get an SBA loan. So you can get an SBA loan, and a lot of people don't know this. You can get an SBA loan, which is a government loan for small businesses, and it helps fund the whole thing. It's a high-risk loan, but it's a variable loan. So that loan, that rate gets adjusted over time. So if the okay. income is really bad and the interest rates are, or let's say the interest rates are high, you're going to be paying more money. It's like prime rates. Plus 2% or whatever it is. But if
the current required down payment to qualify for one of these, a minimum down payment, 10. Okay.
10% is the lowest. You could potentially get 20%. We're getting 10% on ours. So for easy numbers, let's say that we're buying this company at $1 million and we're having to put 10% down. That's $100,000. But if it's making, let's say that's making, I don't know. I mean, let's say we bought at 2X. Just for easy numbers, and making $500,000 net. I mean, some of that mm-hmm. money goes towards paying down the loan, which is equity in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it goes into your pocket right away. Day one, you're making money. So
what are the loan terms on these SBA loans? How long are you paying it back for, and what kind of interest rates are you getting?
Yeah, so it's a 10-year loan. And like I mentioned before, it's usually like a prime rate, whatever the rate is for the industry. Plus like 2% or something like that. So I have lenders that deal with this and kind of just give us like what we're getting. But it's a variable loan. Like if the interest rates drop, we're going to be paying less.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Would there ever be a situation where if you were evaluating a potential portfolio to buy and the owner, the co-host, the property management company, they acquired like very random properties or something? Like some are just like at the top performing properties and then some they just kind of like brought on randomly. Could you ever like buy only the top performing ones and like kick out some of them or say, we don't really need those. We don't want to pay. We don't value those contracts the same. How does that work? Or is it just going to be sold as a package deal?
So we did kind of that. So everything is negotiable. That when you go into these arrangements, everything's a negotiation. So I can say, well, listen, I'm not going to be paying you 4x EBITDA because you got these really like properties that don't even fit our portfolio or whatever. It's like I'm paying you 2x or 3x because whatever. So everything is negotiable. However, like with the first acquisition, I don't know what they had originally, but they had more properties that we sat down and the owners were really cool about it. And they were just basically telling us like, yeah, cut these out. Like, you don't need that. Like, let's cut them out. We're going to let them go anyways. Okay. So when they were selling the business, they're like, they're already telling us like, these don't even make the cut. And so we actually, it helped us to not pay for something that we weren't going to use.
So far in your experience, you've worked with sellers who were like very transparent about like these can leave. Okay. That's good to know.
Why contracts? Like if those contracts are really good, you're going to be having to expect to pay like 1.5x or the owner is just going to be like, well, it's a package deal. You can't take that. Mm-hmm. But there are people that will come up to these big businesses and say, hey, like I like these contracts. I want these ones and I'm willing to pay 1.5x, maybe even 2x, whatever the yearly is, and just give me those contracts and you could do that as well. But most cases, a bigger companies usually will, like management companies will usually expand and then they'll cut, right? So they'll have like cuts where they get rid of the owners that are really tough or the owners that are don't hit their criteria. And this is why
I'm like my own portfolio. If I were to sell it, I'm like, there's a good 3 properties in there. Like I would not sell the contract. Like, I know those owners are like, they require some special, you know, just finessing and talking to and reevaluating that relationship constantly. So yeah, this is like almost a selfish question. If I wanted to bundle up my portfolio to sell, like there's some duds in there. I'll admit it.
Well, you can strip them out or you can just say, hey, listen, just pay for these. These ones aren't really, you know, I don't recommend doing these or don't put it as part of the valuation, but add them in as like little cherry on top. Like you want to deal with them, then you can deal with them. But either way, like you should be looking at the let's do a fun example. Natalie, you want to sell your contracts, right? So let's talk about like what really makes the value of the business and what
this is perfect. This was going to be my next question for anyone listening who's like, I'm tired of co-hosting. Patrick, do you want to come buy all these? What can they do to like prepare their portfolio or something for a sale like this?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, with yours, you have like 10, I believe, less than a stock. So it's a lot less. So we probably do more of a contract buyout. But with the bigger companies, like the 30, 40, why do some sell at 7x EBITDA and then some sell at 2x EBITDA? It's like such a wide range. And I started looking into this and I started sitting down with other big property managers and like really just diving in and asking as many questions as I can to figure out this problem. Like, why is that? And what I figured out at the end of the day, you're buying the contracts. So the contract is the number one most important aspect that every owner doesn't like take into account. They're just like, whatever. I just want to sign up as many as I want. And I just want to get the month. Bad idea when you want to sell your business, because I'm going to look at them and be like, that is a huge risk. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take on the risk of that owner potentially leaving. I'm going to pay you less. So what you really want is strong contracts. What does that mean? Assignability clauses. What is the break clause, right? Like, can people just leave the contract today if they wanted to? Or is there, you know, prevention and an owner hold on that? Are you co-hosting or are these under your own account? If they're under your own account, like there's owner friction. There's less of a reason for that owner to leave. Right. I'm trying to do everything in my power for that owner to stay. If I can de-risk it as much as possible, I'm willing to pay more money. So are the owners able to break the contract at any given point? Are these contracts even assignable? What are the terms in these contracts? When I'm buying new businesses, I'm looking for a year minimum. the big property managers that get the 4 or 5x, they have 2-year minimums. So they'll do 2-year contracts and then 2-year renewals. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking like, how do I even convince somebody to do that? It's all about trust. It's building trust with the owners. It's building relationships. It's a whole nine yards. It's such a hard thing to transition. It's hard to change contracts on people and tell people, hey, I'm switching to 1-year or 2-year. And you've been doing month this whole time. So, you know, you have to do this practice from the start. If you don't, then you have to kind of transition and start doing this process. But also like with the agreements, like is like, what else do you have in there? Like, do you have anything that's going to exhibit liability for the company? Do you have, is everybody being assigned? Like, for instance, like you're supposed to have be on the policies for these properties, insurance contracts. So are you on those policies? Because that protects your butt when things happen, right? And so like you have to be as a property manager on those contracts. And also that creates friction. So anything that creates friction and makes it harder for the owners to leave is actually valuable for somebody that's buying the agreements. Because like you said, if it's month to month, everyone can leave and that's a huge risk. So how do I make more money? Contracts at the end of the day.
Wow. So the more solid that those contracts are, the more you'd be willing to pay. Okay. And then one thing I've talked a lot about on this podcast is the difference between a co-host and a property manager. The co-host is kind of the like loophole to get in without needing that realtor's or broker's license. You can't handle money, however. You shouldn't own the person's account, right? You should be added as a co-host onto their Airbnb or whatever. What are you buying? Are you differentiating between a co-hosted portfolio and a property management portfolio?
Yeah. So there is value to having a trust account and having a property management company.
Okay.
The property management company. And there's ways to actually transition to that, which is a whole nother episode on self. But I think the most important thing is if you have a co-hosting portfolio, you can still actually have a trust account. That's the thing people don't understand is the trust account is handling finances for other people. So when we bought ours, we actually, even when we buy like a co-hosting business, like the one we bought was a co-hosting business. Like they had, everybody was as a co-host. But they had a trust account. So that means all the money flowed through them. And that's the way we're structured.
Is that legal? I thought that you couldn't do that unless you're a licensed property manager.
It's legal. Well, the way we do it is we're sponsored by a broker. So it's a real estate broker. He sponsors the account. However, okay. I've been talking to people. There's other ways to do it than having a real estate broker, I believe. I'm still exploring that, so I can't really talk about it.
Okay.
But there are ways to do that. So once I find out, I'm going to share it. But I know that like HostBuy, like those bank accounts are just for property managers. Like they have trust accounts on those on their platform. So there, I
so
know
this is kind of a loophole. Instead of you as... You're not technically a property manager, right? If you're a co-host, so you still can't technically hold the funds you personally as the PM, but you can make a trust account that's then holding all of these funds. Okay. And if you can like have the license of that account hanging with a broker.
Yes.
Okay.
Or you can have, I think there might be other ways around it, but I'm still exploring that. But yeah, that's what we did.
Okay.
So we have a legal trust account. We have to abide to certain rules and regulations. But that protects the owners. If I get sued, if our company gets sued, they can't go after those funds. Those are owner funds. But because they're owner funds, we can only pay out on the property level expenses. We have all these like rules, which honestly is not hard to follow. You just have an accountant and you just have them follow it. It's not really that difficult, but it makes your business a lot more legit. And on top of that, it allows you to hold funds and you don't have to chase people. And it makes you more legitimate. So you could sell your contracts and as is, but if you're getting to like the 30-40 range, you want to start building like the actual systems in place so that when people buy your company, there's a reason for it.
If you're anything like me, you got into the short-term rental game looking for passive income. And since then, you've found that managing your listing is anything but passive. Sound familiar? Between messaging guests, managing your calendar, overseeing maintenance, it's a lot to tackle, and Hospitable is here to help. Hospitable saves hosts like you time by taking recurring tasks and guest messaging off your plate. You can automate responses to common questions, schedule messages throughout the booking flow, and even get AI to draft messages for you. You'll also be able to manage your calendar across booking channels from one place and can integrate with third-party tools like smart locks and dynamic pricing. Hospitable is the highest rated software in the industry with a 4.9 out of 5 rating. Hospitable gives you confidence to automate more of your short-term rental management so you can get more of your valuable time back. Try Hospitable for free with a 14-day trial. And if you use this link, you'll get an additional 25% off for 3 full months. Just head to hospitable.com/novacancy. Again, that's hospitable.com/novacancy to claim your offer. Hospitable. Sleep easy, host confidently. Okay, that makes sense. So somebody listening who's a co-host right now, if they want to, maybe they're not ready to sell their portfolio now, but they are thinking about this 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, what are the steps that they should be taking right now would be to make sure that those contracts are absolutely solid, like get an attorney in there to review it, mitigate any risk, add yourself to the insurance policies, and then set up a trust or some way to hold those funds.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Next thing is going to be a liability production. So what, like, people don't really look into this, like, your insurance brokers should be your best friend. You know how many guests are going through our houses all the time? Like thousands, you know, that's scary. And the fact that, like, somebody doesn't want to just have a malicious thought to potentially sue. Like, we've had a few people that have threatened us. And so you're going to be happy you have this in place. So, like, for us, what we did is we're working on insurance right now, but you have to have general liability insurance, just like your slip and fall insurance. Like, hey, I fell, I broke my hip, whatever, I'm going to sue you. But you also want to have professional liability insurance, which is a whole nother sector of insurance. That's like, hey, you hired a vendor and the vendor was doing work on the pool and they stabbed a hole in the pool and the new owner has to pay for the pool. Where does that come from? Right? Mm-hmm. Having insurance there to protect you from owners are like, well, you have to pay for it. Like, what are you going to do in that case? Right? But this is, you have that as a professional vendor, like that, things happen like that. You're going to hire vendors and there's a lot of people going in and out of the house. If people steal, if like all this stuff happens, like you have to have protection there. And then on top of that, you also have to have protection from, so there's another kind of protection called, why am I blanking on this? The employee, I forgot the name of it. It's something like with, workers' comp policy.
Okay.
The workers' comp, yeah. So that doesn't, here's the thing that people don't know. It's not just W-2 employees. You have to have workers' comp for people, especially in California, depends on what state you're in. But workers' comp is important in general, but California is so stringent. So like, if you're in California, you better have like workers' comp and it has to cover by law.
Even if your cleaner is W-9, 1099.
Doesn't matter. You have to protect them. Because here's the thing. Unless they're part of a cleaning business, if you're employing a business versus you're employing like an individual, if you're employing an individual and they don't have workers' comp with anybody else, you're responsible. Yeah. So like, what if something happens to them? That's going to fall on you. If she needs that, that's going to fall on you. And so that can ruin your business like that. And so having all that in place, insurance is really important. That's all I'm going to say. Just get it done. I know it's boring and I know contracts are boring. I know work, all this insurance stuff is boring, but have those in place. Now, the more fun parts, they're not that boring, but are important to have are definitely great houses, great owners, you know. When I come in, I'm going to look at all your contracts, all your agreements. I'm going to see if everything's done right. But I'm also going to look at the houses. I'm going to look at, what are you managing? What is the potential of these houses? What are you currently making with those houses? Can I make more money on these houses? Can I add value to this business? Is this business missing things that I can actually add to create more money? This is not long-term rental, folks. This is short-term rental industry. There's so much money that it can be made that people are just not taking advantage of. And so that's like a big fun thing I like to have. So with that, I want to see value add. So can I make more money for this business? If I can increase 30% revenue just on pricing, that's huge. If I can then optimize operations and cut expenses I don't need and add VAs and increase revenue or my net profit there, I'm going to do that. That's another value add. If I can come in and bring a in-house, like you have let's say somebody has 50 units and they don't have an in-house store, like HostCo. I can bring a HostCo store in. Make money on early check-ins, late check-outs, and on my value, the business skyrockets. There's so many ways to add value to this business. And I can come in and I can let's say I can come in and find this management company that's not being run right. And I can just make 50% just on better operations. Now, if I can make more money based on you know, my brand or my likeness or, you know, my presence in the area and make like bring on more clients, like that's going to add more value to the business, right? Mm-hmm. So like as long as they have a good infrastructure in place and I can increase the top line as much as possible, that's going to be huge value add that I, as an investor, am willing to even pay a little bit extra for, or not even pay extra for, but have the idea that I can make, I can buy a business that's making $1 million a year and then make $2 million next year. And now the business just 2x in value. Now, if I can go into this business and it makes $1 million a year and I'm paying a low multiple, like a 2x multiple, because they don't have all their systems in place, they don't have good contracts, they don't have all that. And I come in and I make better contracts, better systems, better everything, better liability protection, better trust account, all that kind of stuff. Now I can just, I can sell that business at a 6x.
Mm-hmm.
So I can take a, I can buy it at 2x, sell it at 6x just by building a better foundation. And then I can add value on top of that and sell it even more because I make more money every year than the 1 million net.
So you are, we started last year when I interviewed you, we talked about burring properties, individual properties, buying ugly properties, adding value. And you are essentially now burring these commercial portfolios, right?
Built.
You're buying shitty ones that like are not being run well, adding this value, and then trying to sell it for $10.
All about scale, right? Buy hotels. So this is the thing. People buy short-term rentals all the time, right? But now everyone's starting to buy hotels. Great. I love hotels. Hotels are a great industry, but guess what? It's a lot of equity. It's all equity stuff, mm-hmm. right? So it's a lot of equity buildup. You make money on the sale. I want to make money today, like right now. I want to make money. So I can either buy an Airbnb with like co-hosting is, there's co-hosting and there's buying management companies. So that's the same thing as like single family Airbnb and a hotel. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get one. I want to get 50. Because if I can get 50, it's all running the same way. It's actually less work because I don't have to build a website. I don't have to build all this. I can just come in and I can just do better pricing. It's like, boom, instant value, right? Like I love that. And that gives me so much more excitement over just something that's not, that's one or two co-host properties that maybe I can make 20% more money for one co-host property. Yeah, but what is the value of that going to go up versus me making 20, 30% more on a whole 40 of properties? What if I can do that for 40 properties? Now I'm making way more money than the previous mm-hmm. one, right? So I'm looking at it as scale. Like, how can I make this bigger and better? And here's my big thing, right? And I talk about this quite a bit now. Our industry as a whole, short-term rentals, there are 1.5 million vacation rentals in this country, right? 1.5 million. That's what they say. Now, how many of those are being managed by Vacasa? Can you guess? Number one. That's the number one company, by the way. Number one company, most managed rentals. How many do you think?
I don't know. 10%? I don't know.
2.6.
2.6. Okay.
Number one contender. Number one management company only has 2.6% of the market. What does that mean? That means it's a diverse market. There's so many players in this market. What happens to a market where there's so many different players in the market? It condenses. Over time, the big players are just going to keep acquiring the small guys. And that's exactly what's happening. So when I say small guys, I'm talking about like 400 units. They're like, yeah, let's acquire this 400 unit portfolio. But then you have all these mom and pop shop owners that are like, well, I don't want to sell the Vacasa. I want somebody that's going to take my property, take care of it, love it. You know, this is the same way. My third property management company that I'm buying, they're one of the best. They can sell to anybody, but they chose me. Why did they choose me out of anybody? I'm a small dog. But the thing is, they trusted me that I was going to take care of their clients afterwards. I see I see Vacasa acquiring management companies, and then 50% of their clients leave. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm a small player. I'm going to take care of this business. I'm going to carry the legacy for your business. And I know I can do that. And so people are willing to work with you over anybody else. And this is going to continue to happen. When 2.6% as the number one player owns 2.6% of the market, you know that there's so much opportunity out there that's not being even tapped into. And so it goes to say, who's going to be the person that's going to tap into that opportunity? I'm for sure how I'm going to keep acquiring these companies. I'm not stopping to buy these companies. I can enter a market and instantly add value. Hell yeah. the hardest part about this is finding all the people, boots on the ground, all the trusted vendors, all of that. When you buy a company, you get all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Only vet the contracts or vet everything correctly than you do. So yeah, there's a statistic that said there's 25,000 vacation rental companies in the area or in the US.
5,000.
Okay. So that's a lot of opportunity, folks. And it doesn't have to be buying 40 units. It could be buying a contract here and there. It could be buying Natalie's bad contract she doesn't want to deal with. And
wow, anyone want to take them? Those three for grabs. Patrick, this is the last thing I want to ask you. This is kind of a personal question for your situation, but I know you said when you bought that first company, you had six of your own properties that you bought and you kind of put them under this new brand. How did you differentiate the payout structure in that case? Since you were an owner on those, but now you have like VAs and stuff you're paying out, they're not subject to like a 25% commission, like you own that property. So I'm just kind of curious how you umbrella to those underneath.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I put all of my own properties on management contracts.
And okay.
We pay them out 15% because it adds value to the business.
Oh, interesting.
Somebody's looking to buy my business.
So the company is paying you out 15% commission. No, I got that wrong.
I'm paying the company 15% commission to manage my properties. And so this kind of rate, it's obviously a lot less than what I usually charge, like 25, 30. But they get the benefit of having everything done for you. And
that's smart because for you, you had a bigger goal of growing the company. It wasn't necessarily about profiting off of the six as much as possible. So lump them in and make the whole company higher value. Okay.
Exactly. So that adds value too. And so if the company makes more money, either way, it's coming to me. So if it makes more money, then the company makes more money.
Okay. I was just curious because I think a lot of the co-hosts who listen to this show started with their own properties. Those did well. This was my story. Those did well. And then neighbors started approaching you to manage, and that's how you grew. And so me thinking in that capacity, if I were to sell mine, there's like my family's properties are in there, the one I own, and I don't know how that would transition, but that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Yeah,
you just give yourself a lower fee. And so when the new person that's buying it will pay for those contracts because you're still in a contract with the company. You know, it's a separate entity and it adds value. And like if you're exiting, Natalie, like, do you really want to manage your own properties still?
No.
Yeah, exactly. So why not secure like a low percentage
15%,
where
yeah,
and still make money? So it's a win-win.
Yeah. And that 15% is so much easier to swing when you've got a concentration of properties and they're operating at scale and, you know, restocking supplies and sharing boots on the ground and handyman and cleaners. Oh, okay.
Like the VAs answer, like in the beginning, instantly, like I was answering questions. Now I hired VAs that were being paid for by my other properties. It was great. And plus, like, I don't understand why people buy Airbnb. Like, you can buy one Airbnb and cash flow $1,000 in this market because of interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Or buy 15 Airbnbs with the same money and cash flow 15, let's say $1,000 each. And so that's 15K. You know, I don't understand why people are still buying Airbnbs and not buying co-host contracts or just going into co-hosting in general.
Well, I'll tell you, for me going into this interview with you, my thought was that I'd rather buy property because that can appreciate more. But you explained so well that you buy something for 2X the contract value and you're turning around and able to sell it now at a 6X. So there's appreciation there too. So
there's business value, right? So there's business value and property value. But I will stand by this. I love property investing. I'm not saying I'm not an investor. I still do BRRRR. I still own properties because there's more benefits than that. There's tax benefits, right? So yeah.
This was really, really interesting, Patrick. Thank you so much. Yeah, you answered a ton of questions. Some of the questions that we got before we recorded, I know people were asking, how do I prep my portfolio to sell? How do I get Patrick to buy it? So there you guys go. I hope that you learned something and what you can start doing now to prepare for a higher value on that. But yeah, this was really, really insightful and helpful. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And for anybody that's looking to like sell their portfolio, if you want to contact me, even just to get your 2 cents on your portfolio, just let me know. I can talk you through any questions you may have. Like, I'm just going to shameless plug Patrick, P-A-T-R-Y-K. _SWIETEK. You can find me on Instagram, but also I have a Facebook group. If you type in buy and sell STR property management companies, I have a whole Facebook group just on this concept of people that are looking to buy or sell their businesses. And there's transactions that happen there every single day. So see you guys on the flip side.
Okay, we will link Patrick's Instagram. I'm also going to put the episode that he was previously on if you guys want to reference that. And we'll put the Facebook group down in the show notes below.
Much love.
Thank you. And finally, for this week's Am I the Airbnb Hole? Today we've got a situation involving a guest who does not know when you need to go to mommy with your personal problems and when it's appropriate to take them to the real world. In this case, it was not appropriate and she should have gone and cried about this to mommy. Okay, so let's read this. This host posted, one of my guests who is coming for 2 days just sent me this. Her friend reserved the booking through Airbnb. Message. I'd like to keep this conversation private. LOL, so much for that because this was screenshot and put on Facebook, but here we go. I'd like to keep this conversation private. My stay's confirmation code is... we'll censor that out. And the receipt ID is... blah, 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 blah. My stay was February 23rd through 25th. Originally, I planned to stay at your Airbnb for a ski trip with 10 adults and kids, splitting the cost at $161 per person. I paid for myself and another person, $322 total. But since I now can't go, they won't be going either. Now I need the remaining 8 adults to split $322 among themselves, $40.25 each. Only 3 have paid me back. The rest refuse, even sending proof that they have money to pay me back. They simply just don't want to. I urgently need the money for medical and other urgent expenses. Can you advise on this situation? They have stolen my money, using it to cover their stay, so I seek your guidance as the host. If there's anything I can do, or you can do, could you please advise me? Huh? Huh? This says you literally could not come up with or craft a situation that has less to do with the host than this. How in the world is it this host's issue? How this gets split up? Way too much information is being brought up here. This person's medical bills, the fact that their friends are stealing from them. I'm sorry, who stole from you? You're the one who's trying to steal. This girl is the one who's trying to steal. You originally had an agreement to split the total amongst 10 people. You back out, that causes your friend to back out. Now there's 8 people left and now you want them all to pay up extra? Miss ma'am, Miss Thing, you are the one out here who's trying to steal from your friends. You guys entered this ski trip with an agreement that all 10 people were on board for. You went and screwed everything up. Your little friend, who apparently can't go anywhere without you, she pulled out, screwed everything up, and now you're demanding 8 other people pick up the slack because you couldn't figure your shit out? Absolutely not. Go cry to your mommy about this, okay? Go tell her, hey, my friends are being really mean and I'm really sad about it. This is not your host's problem at all. What do you want them to do? Refund you your portion? Call up the other 8 people in the group and ask them to pay? What in the world do you want the host in this situation to do? Now, here's what we have to point out, okay? When this guest reached out to the host, they said that their friend made the booking through Airbnb. This person did not reach out via Airbnb. They got a hold of this host outside of the platform, okay? So they personally don't have an active reservation with this host. Their name is not anywhere on there. This host owes them absolutely nothing. Like, if it were me, I would just say, we don't have an active reservation existing with your name. I am only able to speak with whoever made the booking through the Airbnb platform. And that's it. And that's it. Like, this host owes this person nothing. They are not going to be leaving the review. They are not going to be the one checking in. They're not going to be there. They're telling you right now they're not even going to be there. You owe them nothing. One of the comments on this post just said, no response is a response. And I think that that is the correct approach here. There's no reason to respond to this at all. Block their number. I'm assuming that they reached out via text because there's no way they could have like messaged you through Airbnb. They didn't have the reservation. They probably reached out via text, blocked their number, and do not talk to this person.
And with that, it is now checkout time. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Lastly, as Airbnb hosts, we all can appreciate a good 5-star review. So you already know a great review on this podcast would mean so much to me. Please subscribe, review, share, and connect with me in the show notes below. Bye!